from an old burn scar, possibly caused by acid. All of them looked as if they were no strangers to violence. The stench around the corpses was nearly unbearable. Ryan took a rag from his jacket pocket and tied it around his lower face. The material cut down on some of the stank. His stomach was tight as he walked into the clearing. Moonlight shafted through the tree branches and washed over the faces of the dead. Standing almost within arm's reach of the men, the first thing Ryan noticed was that they hadn't died from being hanged. All three men's pants had been torn or cut open. Blood crusted the material around their flies, frozen where it had crept down their thighs. Ryan used a self-light to take the guesswork out of what he was seeing. In the pale golden glow he held protectively in a cupped palm, he saw that all three men's genitals had been hacked off. The wounds weren't nice and even, as if they'd been done with a knife or an axe. They were jagged and irregular, with puckers showing where flesh had been pinched together in the jaws of scissors or snips of some kind. All three men had their hands tied behind their backs with vines. Their faces were marred by blood as well. Frozen crimson tears hung on their cheeks and stubbled jawlines. Small forked oak branches the length of Ryan's longest finger had been wound with single strings of mistletoe laden with white berries, then shoved through each man's eyes, puncturing the lids and penetrating deeply. The amount of blood testified they'd been alive when the sticks had been pushed through. Ryan stuck the burned wooden stick of the match into the frost to take away the heat. He pocketed it once it was cool, conscious of leaving no trail at all.
It's safe enough.
These corpses were left as a definite message to someone.
Yeah, that's what I figured too. Somebody marking territory. Bastard hard about drawing the lines when they went about it.
That's a mean way to kill a man.
Ryan forced himself to go through their pockets. He turned up a few coins that he wasn't familiar with. Some looked manufactured, but there were a half dozen that looked as though they'd been hammered out by hand, often more oval than circular.
From the way it looks, some kind of justice was meted out here.
They hunt us. Look at the clothes. Scuff from going to the brush. Crawling on ground. Mud stains on the chest and knees. Pants double-stitched. And legs tucked in boots. Keep crawling things out. Those bags at their waists are game bags, maybe.
Christy gave the older man's corpse a push, causing it to swing around at the end of the rope.
Jack's right.
Christy lifted the back of the man's coat with the tip of her knife. She pointed to the canvas bag at the man's back, hanging from short leather thongs. Then she cut the thong, catching the bag in her left hand.
Could I see those coins?
Sure, Doc.
If somebody went to the trouble to leave a note like that, they might be inclined to wait around to see who comes checking it. And if they don't, maybe they come back to check on it pretty regular.
A couple minutes more and we'll be out of here. What's in that bag, Christy?
Christy opened the drawstrings and peered inside the bag she'd taken from the dead man.
Looks like some kind of tubers.
She took one of the tubers out. It was wrinkled from dehydration and bent at almost a 90-degree angle in the middle, the color of pumice, and shot through with dark green veins.
It's not like anything I've ever seen.
May I?
Sure. Here.
Upon my soul, friend Ryan. These coins are English shillings. A half crown. There's a florin here that was out of manufacture, though still in usage in the 1990s when I was around. Then we're back. We're in England.
Maybe. Don't get your hopes up. And if we are, getting back home is going to be tough.
Do you mind if I keep these?
I've got no use for them.
Reaching into his pocket, Doc produced a weathered and scarred coin purse.
Now there's a happy sound.
Even in the near darkness, Ryan could see Doc's eyes glowing with the familiar light of the occasional madness that traveled with him. Being trawled through time, bereft of family, and thrown into situations that would have been impossible for most people to deal with, had left its scars.
Let all the learned say what they can. 'Tis ready money makes the man. William Somerville. Have you ever had a pint of English ale?
No.
Oh, we should look. Where there's an Englishman's pockets with coins in them for spending, there has to be a pub. The first dram is on me when we find it, and the loser of a gentlemanly game of darts shall buy the second. Ah, breathe in that clean English air. You've never had such nectar.
I'm still wondering about this tuber. It's not food, not even when it was fresh.
You taste it?
I'll give it a shot. am!
Poison?
Far from it. Ugh. That is some kind of narcotic. If I played with it enough and had access to a lab, even a modestly supplied one, I could make anything from a local anesthetic to a righteous, foot-in-your-face, recreational drug that would open up whole worlds for your amusement.
Drugs?
A mean one, too. Somebody fooling around with that stuff would have to be real careful, because the line between recreation and rigor mortis has got to be a thin one.
Also means we're close to civilization. Probably a large vill. Something like what you're talking about. People gotta have time on their hands to build up enough fear and paranoia to use. Smallville barely making ends meet, left on their own. They won't put up with that kind of shit.
Look at the rope cut around this one's waist. There were more bags on this man's belt. Somebody took them off.
Whoever killed him was protecting territory.
And it figures they won't be very hospitable to us if they find us poking around. Let's head out of here.
They hiked through the dense forest for 2 more hours. They were through the valley now, heading uphill at a sharper grade. Ryan maintained the lead, followed by Christy, who was watching over Doc. The old man was physically drained, and he had to lean heavily on his sword stick. The landscape continued to be thickly forested, but thinned somewhat as they traveled upward. The frost held a harder crust now, facing the windward side of the mountain.
Hold up.
Ryan didn't need much of a breather, but Doc looked like he did. Ryan found a flat shelf of rock sticking out from the mountainside and hunkered down to present a smaller target to the wind. He leathered the Sig Sauer and pulled out the Steyr, holding onto it with both gloved hands and leaning on it for support. Jack moved to Ryan. The albino's cheeks were pinked from the cold, and his white hair blew in wild disarray. He dropped into position beside Ryan behind a gnarled pine tree that clung tenaciously to the mountainside.
Doc won't make it much fighter.
I know. I'm thinking maybe we can find a place up a little farther. Some place we can have a fire and get thawed out proper and be protected. I reckon we've come far enough that we're out of whoever's territory that was back there.
Hope so.
Come morning, I think we're going to find out. One way or the other. You want to scout the situation a little farther up with me?
Yeah. I'll stay till I get cold. I don't like it.
JB?
What's up?
Take 10 more. If there's soup, drink it. But stay away from the heavy stuff. Don't want anybody getting sleepy from overeating. Me and Jack will run a wreck and be right back.
Ryan and Jack climbed steadily for almost 15 minutes by Ryan's cron. The incline had become steeper as the bite of the wind had grown steadily.
Ryan, look, the cave.
Ryan looked into the shadows where Jack pointed. The frost wasn't as prominent at the top of the mountain range, but with the irregular surfaces and the sharp angles, details were blurred.
Careful.
The brush and trees had been torn and twisted by the elements until they looked like muty versions of themselves. That was one of the things bothering Ryan. They were at an area with a redoubt, yet the area was relatively free of the nuke destruction that was usually apparent around such spots. No scabbies, no stickies. The 3 men they'd found hanging looked perfectly normal, except for the mutilation. Jack walked nice and easy, as if he were out for a stroll instead of a wreck. Ryan knew, though, that appearances could be deceiving. He'd never seen anyone move as fast as Jack Lauren when danger threatened. Ryan could see the mouth of the cave now. Tall enough for a man to pass through on his feet, it gaped like a wound in the wind-blasted stone. There were no signs of life. Something flickered at the corner of Ryan's vision. He turned quickly and looked back down the mountain. He wasn't sure what had alerted him. At first, he was going to acknowledge the itch across the back of his neck as a combination of fatigue and imagination, and the result of the Mat-Trans jump.
What the hell is that?
Ryan spun, bringing the Steyr up before him, gripping the barrel in his other hand. Ahead of him, Jack suddenly moved backward, one hand lifted up defensively, while the other sprouted one of his leaf-bladed throwing knives. A gray-furred, muscular body followed him, the ivory fangs slashing from out of thin black lips. Jack's left hand had slid in behind the wolf's neck and gripped a handful of hide and hair. He wasn't able to restrain the beast, but he pushed it away enough that the jaws crashed together on empty space over his shoulder rather than his face. Ryan started forward, just as the wolf's mate exploded from the cave. Wheeling, Ryan brought up the Steyr, placing it between the bitch's slavering jaws.